I Hate Politics is a podcast about a human activity we love to hate. I am Sunil Dasgupta. We've covered housing and education and the environment. And they are domains with numerous complexities, trade-offs, and challenges. But electricity law and regulation, that's a whole different level. Maryland is one of 13 states that are part of a regional power grid that goes from New Jersey all the way to Illinois. It is and has been and will be for the foreseeable future an energy importer. In fact, only three states in the regional grid are energy exporters: Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Michigan. The regional grid is run by an independent entity called PJM. Recently, PJM's planning for the next year and the following year suggests that wholesale electricity rates within the grid will rise significantly as demand grows and states within the grid try to phase out fossil fuel generation to meet climate goals. Maryland is going to be one of the most affected states with fastest growing power rates. To get a handle on the situation, I asked Frederick Hoover, chair of Maryland's Public Service Commission, the state's utility regulator, to explain what's going on. And yes, we are reviewing electricity deregulation itself. A programming note, the audio for the episode can be hard at places. I am sorry and working on a better way to capture good audio. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by UMBC's Political Science Program, where you'll learn to shape public policy, impact communities, and function at the center of modern society. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from the Interstate by DMV heavy band, Finster. Kate Johnson on vocals and guitar, Doogie Whitaker on guitars, Sky Darwin on bass, and Matt Zelens on the drums. The songs are from their 1997 album, I Wish I Had a Camera. Fred Hoover, welcome to I Hate Politics.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
The role of the Public Service Commission, the PSC, is to ensure safe, reliable, and economic public utility to Maryland public, and to ensure that utilities and public service companies are following the law. Given this mission, how is the commission thinking about the rapid rise in electricity demand in the state, you know, that is already now playing out in the capacity auction, which is the futures market where power generators commit to supply a certain amount of power to the regional grid? How are you thinking about this massive expansion in electricity demand?
So what the commission tries to do in going forward is to make sure that we have what's known as resource adequacy. And that is sort of a joint effort we undertake with a lot of other partners, principally PJM, which is the regional power grid that supplies electricity to not only Maryland, but all of the surrounding states, all the way over to Illinois. The in the old days, there was actually a fully integrated system where the local utilities not only distributed electricity, but they actually owned the generators. Since 1999, that part of the business has been separated, and so now the generation is an independent entity overseen by PJM and FERC, but the Public Service Commission doesn't have direct regulatory authority over that. We do participate in proceedings before the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and we participate to a degree in front of PJM. We don't have any regulatory authority over PJM. And in fact, PJM is run by a number of stakeholder committees, which we're not even one of those. But the state commissions have banded together and have formed an organization known as OPSI, which communicates directly with PJM to articulate our concerns about policies and actions that PJM has undertaken. Given the sort of historic rising demand that we're seeing, what we're trying to do at our end is to make sure that the power generation sources that are being located in the state, renewable resources, principally solar and soon in the future offshore wind, become integrated into the PJM market. And there's been a problem the last few years with the renewable resources getting what's known as an interconnection agreement from PJM. And that's kind of slowed the deployment of solar energy in this part of the state. And we've been trying to work with PJM to make that process go a lot quicker so that these projects can actually get online and provide electricity. The other thing that we're looking at in the state of Maryland on the demand side is a very aggressive energy efficiency program. We have a law known as Empower, which has the local utilities greatly involved in trying to provide energy efficiency services, products, and management techniques to customers, both residential and commercial. And then the final thing that we're trying to look at as a way of a new technology is what's known as battery storage. I mean, historically, the problem with the electric grid was that you literally had to make the power at the same time that you were using it. Now we have the ability with battery storage to make power at one part of the day and use it at another part of the day. That particularly helps with renewable resources, who those types of facilities produce power at with the solar power during the course of the day. With wind, actually, it happens more at night. But what we can do is use the power that's generated by those renewable resources, store it in these batteries, and then use it later on during the course of the day in order to try and meet demand. It's going to take a pretty concerted effort by all of the entities involved in the utility process, both the PJM grid, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the local distribution utilities, and the Public Service Commission, to try to make sure that we get through this transition. Although historically, you know, I do have to comment that we did see a similar thing after the Second World War, and sort of when there was an explosion of development, residential development in the United States, and a conversion to home air conditioning. That also caused a significant increase in demand, and the utility system was eventually able to accommodate that. So I think we will figure out a way to accommodate the data center influx of demand in the state.
Before we get into the specifics of this, I wanted to ask you what the demand and supply gap is from your point of view.
I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I mean, according to PJM, you know, what they've been forecasting is that, you know, their view is the current system, which is, you know, the combination of the increasing demand, particularly from new high-tech facilities in conjunction with the retirement of some of the older power plants is going to create a shortfall between in the next few years or so, which is one of the reasons why we're engaging in this concerted effort to bring about new resources on our end, as well as trying to look at some of these new technologies.
It seems that the primary solution to these problems appear to be via this idea of transmission and reliability. Given where we are with the demand, transmission alone is not going to make the difference. That there is fundamentally a generation gap. Do you see it that way?
In some ways, the state probably needs to take a more aggressive role in trying to create not so much control, but at least have a stronger planning effort when it comes to resource adequacy within the state. I mean, when the system was fully integrated back before deregulation, there was a fairly concerted process within the state to sort of look at what the demand projections were, what was the resource adequacy there, and then make decisions about whether or not to build transmission, whether or not to engage in the construction of new power plants. So what we need to do here is probably go back to that situation where we take a closer look at the demand that we expect to see over the next few years, and then what are the available resource technologies that can address that. And I think the difference is that we can now sort of look at not only the construction of transmission lines and power plants, but, you know, we can try to increase the amount of locally situated power sources, battery storage technologies, and locate them within the state of Maryland as a way of trying to address the overall demand going forward. But it will probably take a sort of more direct effort on the part of the state, not only the Public Service Commission, but also the Maryland Energy Administration and the other entities. One of the big contributors that we're looking forward to help address the increased demand is offshore wind. You know, we've always been interested in significantly sized renewable energy projects. So the wind farms that you see in West Texas and in the Midwest, you know, those are large power capacity issues that we think we should have here. Unfortunately, the wind resources in the state of Maryland on the land-based side are in the most narrowest part of the state out in western Maryland. So a lot of the wind projects wind up being in either Pennsylvania or West Virginia. But the one place where we have significant resources and a place where we can construct a large renewable resource in place is off the coast of the state of Maryland, which is why Virginia, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, and Massachusetts are all looking at constructing these large offshore wind facilities.
U.S. Wind just got permission to move forward, but it's not enough megawattage. We are talking about data centers producing, you know, a demand of about 7,500 megawatts. We are talking about deactivating about 11,000 megawatts in generation capacity. How is 70 megawatts really going to help? What is the aggregate renewable energy you expect to come online? And is that sufficient?
So we're hopeful that, you know, the efforts to promote renewable energy, not only within the state, with solar facilities and offshore from the wind projects, but some transmission projects that can be built that can bring the large land-based renewable power sources into the state of Maryland.
What particular project are you thinking about?
There's a recent FERC order that is aimed at trying to facilitate overall transmission capacity from those renewable resources, mainly located to the west of us, to actually integrate them into our power grid.
So Ohio?
Probably a little farther west. I mean, when you get to Iowa and places like that, where you have, you know, other significant sized renewable energy projects. So, you know, historically, the problem has been the large land-based wind resources tend to be located in areas far away from the population center. And so all across the country, we're going to be looking to try to build transmission that will bring that power into the grid, as opposed to, you know, just building transmission lines to hook up the existing natural gas plants and other facilities in other states. So we want a wider variety of options provided by transmission.
What percentage of its demand does PJM import? Because, you know, if you're talking about Iowa now, you're talking about a national grid.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is sort of the national public service commission, is finally at a point where they're trying to look to, you know, nationalizing the renewable resources throughout the country. This recent order that they gave to help expedite the transmission construction will hopefully address the interconnection between the various grids.
Okay, so let's talk about the really big issue in this trade-off between climate action and energy use. Brandon Shores and Wagner, which are plants that supply mainly in the Baltimore area, they are coal-fired, and there was a plan to move them to natural gas. You know, maybe they didn't work. And now they were slated to be closed in 2025. But PJM, the regional grid operator, has asked Brandon Shores to remain open under a system that allows them to be compensated in a outside of the market that then keeps them open as coal-fired plants. Meanwhile, they're offering the Maryland Piedmont Reliability Project, which is a transmission project connecting Baltimore and Frederick, right, as a solution to when these the Brandon Shores and Wagner could actually be closed. So in effect, we have achieved neither goal there. And that's, I'm talking about 1,250 megawatts. It's not small change.
There's already in place mechanisms that will allow those plants to remain part of the generation system for however long they're needed. Now, I can't specifically comment on the transmission proposal from this referred to as the Piedmont Reliability Project, because I expect that they haven't done so yet, but I expect the applicant to file an application for a permission to build that transmission line with the Maryland Public Service Commission.
The level at which I was asking the question is not about the application. There is this trade-off between climate action, which requires closing down of coal-fired plants, and building more transmission to allow supply to come from elsewhere. In the process, we are achieving neither. You know, obviously, Senator Ben Cardin has now, you know, come out against the Piedmont Reliability Project. So it's kind of a big deal now. We're not building the transmission. We are not closing down the coal-fired plant. But we are...
This is always a long-term process. It becomes a tricky process when you're in that transition period, which we're in right now. But the grid has shown capacity in the past to respond to these changes. And I think, you know, the same thing will happen here.
I assume that we are always in transition in one way or the other. Let's talk about battery storage. How much battery storage do we have at a utility scale? I'm not talking about, you know, retail in people's homes, but at the utility scale, how much battery storage do we have? And what are your expectations about that?
Well, so the state General Assembly a few years ago adopted a law that required the local utilities to have two demonstration projects when it came to batteries. Subsequent to that, they actually changed it from a pilot program to now make it a permanent part of the resources. So I'm expecting, you know, going forward, they're going to see a lot more battery storage projects being pitched, not only by the local utilities, but I expect to see it done in conjunction with a lot of other private developers. Hopefully, you know, what we'll get to is at the distribution level, a situation where you have power being generated, stored, and used sort of simultaneously between buildings, institutions, homes, and automobiles. And the whole process will be integrated enough that you can actually produce and share power within the distribution system, as opposed to always relying on large central station power plants. That is a technology that is not that big a leap.
It's not a technological leap, but it is an economic leap. It is a huge economic leap, because if they could put that much generation on top of buildings, they would.
You know, even though people complain about government setting, you know, aspirational goals for things, it does wind up becoming the spur for the private sector to respond to those things.
The question really is whether we are going to ask the ratepayers to pay this. I mean, there is now an OPC report, Office of People's Council report on the increase in rates. There is an expectation based on the capacity auction this year and next year that, you know, electricity rates in Maryland are going to increase significantly. So yes, I mean, demand does signal to suppliers to produce more and make investment. That's for sure. That's theory. But it comes on the backs, in this case, of ratepayers.
Quite honestly, I mean, that's the main job that I have here at the Public Service Commission, is reviewing the price proposals, you know, offered by the people that supply the product to make sure that, you know, the rates that they're charging are under the standard of being just and reasonable.
So the PJM auction, you have no control over. So in effect, wholesale price of generation is not controlled, right? The control that you exercise is at the final end of the process, which is from the utility to the home. And there, utilities are owed a certain return of rate of return on their investments. And as you are suggesting, all these investments are going to grow their asset base. So in fact, their returns will only increase. So, I mean, I understand that this is what you regulate, but there are rules within which you regulate. Given those rules, how much leeway do you really have?
Well, I mean, when it comes to the PJM process, even though, you know, we don't have any direct regulatory authority over that, we have been fairly active participants in the with the other commissions in trying to influence what PJM does regarding the capacity auctions, the way they set it up. And then the fallback to that is, you know, the entity that does have some power over PJM, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, we are regular participants in proceedings before that body to make sure that they do their job in trying to make getting a handle on the price increases that come at the wholesale level, which in turn will help us, you know, when we have to determine those prices at the retail level.
But if you look at how PJM arrives at its clearing price, they have a demand curve and they construct a supply curve based on the promises made by the generators. And so whatever that intercept is between demand and supply curves is what they're going to pay. So in fact, they have, the market has ruled. I think what has happened is that regulatory authorities have lost capacity to regulate.
Well, I actually don't think we've lost the capacity to regulate. I think there's ways that, you know, because PJM, you know, has constructed its offers when it creates the capacity market within certain rules and regulations that they control. And a lot of times, depending upon how you set up the process, will sort of dictate the results you're going to get. One of the conversations that we've had with PJM is that some of the assumptions and some of the things that they have built into their capacity auctions aren't necessarily correct. And it's also it's not only us saying that. I mean, there is this entity known as the Independent Market Monitor that participates in the PJM system. He's had his own criticisms of how PJM has been constructing its recent auctions, which, if you know, in our view, has had the effect of trying to push the price higher than maybe it be.
The part that you control with respect to what ratepayers are paying, there is a necessity there to make sure that they get a rate of return on their asset base. Asset bases are going to grow given all that we just talked about. So therefore, the rates are going to grow. Do you have real control over that? If the asset base goes and the rate of return is what it is, ratepayers are going to pay more.
The process that's in place requires them to come to us to seek authority from us to both integrate these new resources into the distribution system and then secondly get paid for them going forward. One of the changes that we have made is we've actually opened the door for the distribution planning process, so that not only is it just the folks who work for the utility that are going to be making those decisions, but we've actually allowed outside entities, other parties, to participate in that process.
In fact, the transparency makes it more possible for them to go forward with increased rates. It gives them better confidence to do that.
Well, I mean, it does do that, but it also requires them to think about other ways of dealing with the local distribution network. And so, you know, by encouraging the participation of people who don't work for the utility company, we expect that there's going to be different ideas that may lead to other ways to address this.
So you want the hive mind now. Okay. All right. Let's talk a little bit about something you mentioned earlier, which is the problem that renewable generators have had interconnecting with PJM. What is the problem? Why does it happen?
PJM's system, I think, was originally set up to deal with large central station power plants. PJM was literally just overwhelmed by the number of applicants that came into their process.
The planning authority for the regional grid did not expect to see an increase in solar applications.
Well, I think that's partially a reduction of, you know, a lot of the solar generation, at least in the state of Maryland, has been generated by policies adopted in the state of Maryland, the RPS and the accelerated requirements on that. You know, in hindsight, should PJM been a little more alerted to this? Probably so.
But isn't that their job? I mean, coordinating this?
It is their job, yeah. And so, you know, but again, you know, I'm trying to deal with, you know, the process going forward as opposed to necessarily, you know, blaming, you know, what they didn't do.
A big part of my concern about asking you all these questions is the way that deregulation of the power sector has also essentially degraded the ability of public service commissions, the state, other public authorities to actually manage and plan ahead. And we are getting basically a tragedy of the commons. How do we get around this really over the long term? I mean, the stuff that is going on is so incremental. It is so contradictory sometimes, as in Brandon Shores and Piedmont Reliability Project, that, you know, there should be some better methodology, better governance structure.
When the deregulation law was passed, the thought was, well, on the generation side, this will now be supplied by the private sector, and competition and the price signals from the grid will incentivize the entities to build power plants. You know, that has not necessarily worked. I mean, it's my opinion, you know, not necessarily official commission policy, that the state probably ought to take a more aggressive role in trying to judge the resources that we need and the power demands that we're going to have going forward. So it's going to be a fundamental change from this, you know, unfettered belief in the competitive market to one where the state is a more active participant in it. But I think it's probably something we need to do.
Right. But you need a governance structure to do that.
You know, I don't know what the specific plan might be, but I would fully expect there would be a very serious construction or conversation amongst the various players to look at this idea of having, you know, more state involvement, direct state involvement in the energy planning situation.
Does that look like a super PSC?
Well, I don't know. It necessarily needs to be a PSC as opposed to, you know, an entity that is trying to look over the horizon. You know, part of what, you know, what we deal with is the stuff that sort of comes in the door on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, we deal with the rate cases and things like that. We spend some time trying to do energy planning, but quite honestly, we're not in a position either based on authority or resources to do this sort of long-term energy planning. So I think some entity either needs to be empowered to do that. And we got a number of different entities within state government that are involved in the power process, or creation of a new entity to do it. And I guess it remains to be seen what's the best solution.
Fred Hoover, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
Trying to keep my beat, but they're stomping all around from the unified bounds. Running with the times, gotta keep in the laws. Heaven on the noise, if I go off the road, I've got a mean streak, I can tell. I got one foot in heaven and the other in hell. You can sit and chime those bells, but as for me, I'm out of here.
That's all for this episode of I Hate Politics, where we aim to stem the decline in local news by working with community voices. Don't forget to tune in to our Tuesday morning news analysis. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer, Adama Gay, with support from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from the interstate but DMV heavy band Finster. Kate Johnson on vocals and guitar, Doogie Whitaker on guitars, Sky Darwin on bass, and Matt Zelenz on the drums. The songs come from their 1997 album, I Wish I Had a Camera. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihbpod.org. I hope you'll subscribe and share the podcast as we bring you stories about politics close to you and to your home. See you next time.